Well, he's Zambia's most phenomenal artist. He combines rhythm, soul, gospel. He appeals to the young, the old, those to come, and he has become Zambia's most sensational artist, musical artist. Today, I'm speaking with the one and only, as they say, Pompey.
Hello. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, how are you?
Amazing. Beautiful setup you have
Yeah, no,
here.
it's really great. Thank you for
Yeah.
coming and making it across town.
No, anytime,
Busy
anytime.
schedules.
No, it's worthwhile to come
No,
here.
and thank you
Yeah.
for making time for us.
Not a problem.
So
Not a
you've
problem.
done this so many times.
Yeah.
You need to relax, feel at home.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping to we can maybe press some buttons that haven't been pressed before. And you know what?
Yeah.
If there's a question that I haven't, or a conversation that you are dying to have with me, please have it and bring it out.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's not about me asking questions. It's really just about a
A
conversation.
conversation, yeah. All right.
Yeah,
Thank
but
you so much.
thank you. You look
Yeah.
well.
I'm
Yeah,
well.
welcome
Yeah.
back.
Thank you.
And I'm going to know ask you a little bit, well, quite a bit about your tour
Yeah.
and what's happening with your life now and where we're going in the future. However, obviously, if I've got Pompey in front of me, I can't resist and I have to start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Everybody does that, I know. I'm not going to ask about where you grew up because I
Yeah.
feel that people kind of know that.
Yeah.
But I want to know, did you plan to be an artist? Right.
No, I didn't. Music was a hobby. I thought I wanted to be I wanted I my dream was to be in the corporate space. Through university I got an honors degree in business systems.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my dream. Music was something I just I it made me part of the cool clique in school.
Right.
So I guess I held on
Well,
to
now who's cool now?
it. So that's why I held on to it. It was like more something. I didn't know I could make a living off
Of
music.
course.
And obviously, at the time, being a musician wasn't, it almost wasn't looked at with a lot of credibility.
Of course
I mean, in
not.
a room, with lawyers, doctors,
Yeah.
music, you'd feel that shame of, I mean, of being
Yeah.
almost like, everything failed and you decided to choose music.
No, I see that. Who were
Yeah.
you listening to at the time when you said, can you remember? Smells and music are
Yes.
something that go back for years. There's something that I still smell now, and I go back 20 years, and it's that smell of, I don't know if you remember lanolin or Nivea. There's something they put in those things like 30, 40 years ago. So it's the same with music. Like there's that song and that you must have been listening to at the time or that era, and it was then that I said, right. It's just in terms of time. What were you listening to at the time when you said, this is what I'm going to do?
At the time, I was listening to a lot of Oliver Mtukudzi. I loved him because obviously he was obviously the element of telling stories through music. Yeah, I think he was a huge inspiration for me. My parents loved him, played his music all the time, so I grew up listening to a lot of him. I loved obviously Nas. I've always loved musicians who use music to enlighten people, to the music that empowers them, enlightens them to think maybe something they don't know, or even just a simple story to make them laugh, to think about something they've never thought about. I think music is powerful because it goes straight into the spirit, unfiltered.
Yeah, and of course, what you've done is you've intentionally or unintentionally, you've used music to advocate, to send strong messages, even just starting with gospel. Was that intentional or was it just because you had to? It was a way of relaying what you felt, your belief, or you didn't start off with gospel.
Yes, no, I didn't. I
No.
didn't. So obviously, I was an atheist, a very proud atheist at the time.
But you
but
didn't grow up in a
no,
atheist
I
home.
would say my mom was very much a Christian. My dad was with me. We were atheists together. In fact,
So
he's
you'd sit and have conversations about half of the family being absolutely non-believers and the other side
We wouldn't. I mean, it was. What's interesting about my family is religious inclinations or choice has always been free. Like we've been free. Our parents gave us the freedom to. So actually, what's interesting is that my sister is Baha'i.
Right.
Yeah, my sister.
Okay.
One of my sisters is Baha'i. Obviously, I'm Christian. At the time I was obviously born again, I became Christian. My dad still was an atheist. So we lived obviously in harmony, respecting each other.
I need to sit at the dinner table and see what that looks like.
What that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. But I mean, it's interesting. I think it has enriched all of us because we sort of have learned to respect. Obviously, religion is one of those things that can divide a people.
Absolutely, of course.
But when it's within your family, you sort of have to
figure out and manage.
Yeah. And sort of, I think for me, it has taught me how to exist in spaces where people don't believe what you believe.
Yeah.
And you can still create some harmony or understand. Yeah,
but the world should be like that, right?
Yeah,
Have different beliefs and thoughts and live in harmony.
Exactly.
No, that's great.
Exactly.
So what I want to know is, how did you embark on taking your music into the gospel route?
So I had an interesting encounter. Obviously, I was an atheist, I'll make it short by saying I had an encounter with God, or what you would. I didn't believe in the supernatural.
Mm.
Yeah. I didn't believe in anything of that sort. So when I came to the realization that that exists, I went into a study of religion. I mean, I sort of looked at different religions. I would say I settled on Christianity because of an encounter I had in a church called My People's Church in South Africa, which obviously science couldn't explain. You know, obviously, I as an atheist, you're very logical, you know, and I would say scientific. And I just came to the realization that science doesn't answer all questions.
So was your research very methodical? How did you go about that? Did you visit different churches, institutions, or did you just read about them?
I read about them.
Or did you use AI?
Yeah. Yeah, I wish it was there at the time. maybe for a fast track. But I just befriended people who were of a certain. So I had a friend who was Muslim.
Hmm.
So I'm naturally curious. So I just asked them questions like about the religion. So I looked into Baha'i, looked into Scientology, funny enough, Egyptology.
Mm-hmm.
I studied a lot of that stuff. Yeah. Christianity, funny enough, wasn't on the list. I didn't. It wasn't on the list because at the time I had an understanding of church history according to how I was taught. And some of the terrible things that had happened. And I remember having the conviction when I was young. Like, obviously, I'll give an example of like the point of no return in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
you know, where there was the slaves kept in this the holding room mm-hmm. before they get shipped off. At the top of that storage, if you can say, for the slaves, there was a church. So I remember being young and watching that and seeing, and there was a priest that would intercede for the shipment. I remember being young and seeing that and said, I can't pray to that God. So of course it was a misrepresentation. And manipulation of of what I believe is the true faith of Christianity. But it obviously affected my perspective of Christianity in the beginning. So Christianity wasn't on the table at the time. But I just wondered, I guess the curiosity began that I was curious that why is every civilization, even as remote as a tribe that has never encountered civilization, why did they always feel that they have to worship some type of deity or, you know, some supernatural? So I was thinking, is it them who are foolish or is it me who's foolish? Obviously, as an atheist at the time, like, why does everyone have to believe in something like a higher power? I just to prove whether I was the foolish one or that, I guess I went into a study of an understanding of Christianity. And when I studied for myself, so my salvation didn't come in an institutionalized way, like obviously most of the time it happens in church, you are called, sure. There's an altar call.
Yeah.
It was really alone in my room, I was reading the Bible, and then when the light went on about what the revelation of Jesus Christ and grace is, when I...
So that says so much now about why it's so much part of your life,
yeah,
part
yeah.
of your career now.
Yeah, yeah,
and through
yeah.
that, you're speaking to people, yeah. Enlightening, inspiring, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is probably your most memorable song? I mean, there's so many examples of, like, your amazing songs.
Thank you so much.
But which is the one that really translates into a heartfelt song that speaks to your belief, and it's still got rhythm, and it's still got the beat, and it just encompasses Pompey? I mean, of course, we're going to be part of the Pole Pole
yes,
album.
Yes, thanks.
But
yeah.
looking back now, what is the one that really speaks to you and says all those things about
I would say
your music and you?
I think I will approach it slightly different, because obviously the every song is really, it's a personal expression. It's yeah. almost, some of the songs are almost like diary sessions, like I'm literally expressing my mind. And so I have moments that are attached to every song, if you can say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to pick a favorite one, but the most impactful one that I believe so far is definitely a song called Mulungu Samagona,
mm-hmm.
which means God doesn't sleep. Yeah, definitely that song. I've heard remarkable testimonies of, I'll give you an example. There was a 65-year-old lady who came from the UK, flew into Zambia, found her way to the office, to our office, and said, like, you really wanted to meet me. And obviously I was a bit scared about what was going on. Like, have I done anything wrong? Because I was wondering why an elderly lady, she was really eager to meet me. So when I met her, she said, look, I wanted to commit suicide. I had mental health issues. I had, she went through a very tough time, and she was saying that song carried
me
through that
amazing.
And I contemplated committing suicide. Yeah. So for that, considering that my song could have changed the
Someone's
at that crossroads,
path. Yeah,
my song could have impacted that crossroads to for someone to choose life. I thought, at that moment, I thought, you know what, I can retire now.
And yeah. then do you get that, maybe not, you know, such deep experiences, but do you get that feeling and that response from your fan base, who, by the way, are a huge range?
Thank you, yeah.
From, you know, really
grandparents to children.
Absolutely. And so, you know, as a family,
yeah.
probably a bit like you were, a family would be listening to Pompey as you were listening to Oliver. You know,
yeah.
in the home, because
yeah.
everybody can relate to it.
Yes.
But
yes.
do you find that response generally is just like so positive and like inspiring?
Yeah, no, it's I mean, the feedback is what I guess has kept me going.
Yeah.
I took this career reluctantly. Like, I was like, okay, let me just do one song and let me see what happens. Oh, then okay, let me do an album. And then obviously the response was so strong and the impact was felt. So I would say it's the people who have been driving me to stay on this path.
And
yeah.
look where we are now.
Yeah.
You're touring with Kirk Franklin.
Yeah.
This is stunning.
Thank you. Thank you.
And obviously you've collaborated with so many other people. You've
yeah.
sung with so many other people. The stage just seems to be getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah,
And warmer and warmer, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
How have your collaborations, what have they looked like? And tell me more about how you decide to, two things I'm going to ask.
Yeah.
I want to know about, rather, how you decide to collaborate with somebody
yeah.
and or work with somebody, or say, I will join this tour, or I will sing this song with somebody. Is it a call, or it can be either way, or is it, I feel their music can work for me,
yeah.
or how does it work?
I would say the motive behind the music.
Right.
Obviously, as gospel, there is an agenda behind the gospel. It's very clear that there is an agenda. So I would say the motive behind the music, sometimes, obviously, there can be collaboration, even if it's not necessarily gospel music or a gospel artist. But if the motive is not against what I would say against the cross,
right,
or against the values that I hold as a Christian, then I'm definitely fine to collaborate. So I've done a couple of collaborations.
Yeah, of course.
Not just in music, but even obviously in other projects.
In other projects, your advocacy in gambling.
Yes.
And motivating not just young people, anybody in gambling.
Because
that speaks against your beliefs.
Exactly. So if anyone jumps on the bandwagon, whether they're Muslim, whether they are, and they want to fight the same enemy.
Yeah.
I would gladly collaborate with them. Yeah.
And tell me, because that's an interesting one, because you could have chosen anything.
Yeah.
Was there a particular incident or a particular experience that made you say, no, this is either it's really becoming a big problem or an issue.
Mm-hmm.
What made you approach that and say, I need to partner with this cause?
It was a conviction. Anyway, let me say there's the unofficial version. There's the official version. the unofficial version is that I got a conviction, and I responded to that conviction. The official version is that I got an instruction to speak on gambling. Even as I was. I mean, I've even understood the gravity of what it is more and more. And my conviction is even becoming very much stronger to fight it even more. And what the fight is that not to ban gambling, because gambling has been there. It's an ancient practice.
Of course, in different forms, of course.
But the issue that I had was that I felt it needs to be regulated. The advertisement needs to be regulated. Because obviously, according to the WHO, problem gambling is considered a disease. There is data that is very, very concerning about gambling, which is available everywhere, which is why a lot of places have that regulation. But here, because a lot of people are not aware, we're almost becoming a gambling haven, to be honest with you. So it's just the regulation. Just like in states like Illinois, like Las Vegas was set up that let this be a place where gambling, reigns free. But everywhere else there is regulation because they knew the dangers of gambling. So basically my fight is to try and prevent Zambia being another sin city. and my issue with the advertisement is that just like any other vice, I mean, I feel gambling is being given like preferential treatment, if you can say. All the other vices
are regulated. You feel they're regulated.
Yeah. Like you can't advertise cigarettes on TV or. But this one, which is actually, I mean, according to the data, is more dangerous than it's terribly dangerous.
Mm.
Of the five addictions, the top addictions, which is opioids, like, opium and all sort of stuff. The number one that causes suicide is gambling.
Yeah, debt.
Yeah. So it deals a lot with mental health, which is why even the regulation in these countries again makes it that the gambling companies have to partition some money from their profits to help problem gamblers. But right now in this country, yes, gambling is just given free rein, but there's no single place where a problem gambler can go and can be helped.
Yeah,
now, sure. I was just speaking from a place that I feel that's a bit irresponsible from the policymakers. Mm-hmm. And obviously they reduced the tax from, I think it was 25% to 15%. So all these things, I just felt the values of I feel it is sort of chipping at our values as a country. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure your voice is being heard.
I hope so.
Yeah. And tell me what happens when you go to other countries, because you obviously travel so much. You're advocating, not so much on the advocating, but I'm sure whilst you're there and performing, or if you get the opportunity, you also advocate there. But I want to hear more about your travels on the continent, Kenya, Uganda.
Yes, Uganda. Yes.
I need to hear more about that and see how you are illuminating your voice on the African platform.
Oh yeah. So I mean, shockingly, it's one of the things. I'm surprised even till today. Obviously, knowing that, I would say I reluctantly took this step to take do music. It still shocks me how far-reaching music can be. So a couple of years ago, I don't know how in East Africa my music reached that market, and yeah, I say it reluctantly, but it's almost the mark, the reach there is almost I can even say almost bigger than here. Why I would say that, not I don't want to offend like my people of Zambia. I know they give me support, but I guess maybe there's a bigger markets there.
Mm-hmm.
There are much bigger markets.
Is it on the messaging, or is it on the music? Is it on the beat, or is it on the messaging?
It's on the messaging. So what I've been trying to understand how or why they, I would say, resonate with my music. A friend of mine said that obviously they love reggae.
You're right.
They've loved reggae. It's part of it's the genre they love the most. And reggae obviously is heavy on lyrics. And my music is very lyric heavy. So they resonated with it because of they appreciate lyrics. And
right.
That's for me, I love lyrics.
Yeah.
That's almost the priority, almost above the melody or the music. The lyrics are what I feel is
well, that's really encouraging, because I have a 15-year-old son.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know what anyone's saying when they're listening to music and his friends are listening, and I'm like, what was that word? Stop, rewind. Stop, or not even right. Take it back.
Yes.
And so they're listening more to the beat.
Yes, yes, yes.
Than the lyrics.
Exactly, exactly. So I would say Zambia falls within that category. We love we love the beats, and they're different. I think they're different demographics, like people. So yeah, we love the beat, and I love the beat as well. I mean, but if I noticed I can't listen to a song with a nice beat with no lyrics.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. But obviously there are places, there are people who can listen to a beat, not know anything that's being said, and still appreciate the song.
No, absolutely.
So I guess, yeah, I just express my truth and what I...
How are you going to take the young ones with you? I mean, they're young now.
Yeah.
How are you going to take them with you? Obviously, you've taken people along with you the last, what is it, 15 years?
Yeah.
How are you going to... Yeah. Well, I guess it's just about being truth to yourself, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really what...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think...
What it sounds like.
Yeah. That I would say sums it up. Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day, because I'm not going to say it here, but I'm a fan, because it will tell my age. So I'm a fan of someone out there. Yeah. I mean, diehard fan.
Yes.
I would do anything for this star.
Yes.
And I've followed her for the last X number of years.
Yeah.
And recently, you know, she started changing her face. And I just said, well, I can't change mine.
Yeah.
So I'm moving away from that. And I'm like, you know, this is about a fan who's now dropping off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because things have started changing. Yeah. So it's just really interesting. Obviously, your values, your lyrics, your meaningfulness remains.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
It just goes to show that probably the journey with this particular artist has gone, because it was obviously quite shallow.
I hear you. I hear you.
So I'm not going to change my face anytime
we
soon.
We hope so. we love it as it is.
Yeah, thanks. So now we can't do this without talking about Esther.
Yeah, yeah.
Esther Chongo, amazing woman.
Yeah.
Your collaborations, your partnership is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
If this was anywhere else in the world, people struggle to combine profession and family, especially when you're both in the same profession. Mm, I don't know if it's easier or harder. Maybe one understands the other one better when they're not. I don't know.
Yes,
there might be a level of competitiveness there.
Yeah.
How does that work? How do you guys, what's the ingredient there?
I would say at Pompey at home, there's no Pompey at home. There's no the titles are left at the door. At home, I'm a husband. You know, she's a wife. She's a mother. I'm a father. And we put, that's P1 for us. That's priority number one. The home is the first priority. Everything else, if I was to choose between being a celebrity and my family, I would drop the celebrity instantly. That's my number one ministry. That's my number one priority. It's the same for both of us. So it's easy to navigate when that's the priority and everything else is sort of secondary.
Sure.
Yeah, it's easier to navigate. So fortunately, we both look at things that way. So it's almost been effortless. We haven't had to have interventions or meetings where like, okay, no, we need to.
No, that's great.
There's been a natural balance because of the how we prioritize.
So again, that comes back to the values and the Christianity and this is what is important
in our
life. It's more important than, like you say, like the,
you
know, being a celebrity out there and believing in the same things.
Exactly. Obviously. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah, so I would say that just like myself, I think she's very strong on what she believes in.
Yeah. So what would the dinner table look like then if I had to invite myself? Invite myself.
You are invited. I caught the you're invited. The dinner table is not our usual chill spot while eating. It's in front of the TV watching Netflix.
Which is what was the last one you both watched? A series that you just said, oh my goodness, shut the doors, turn off the phones, and don't tell anyone we're here.
What's crazy is that we watch a lot of documentaries.
Okay.
Anyway, the last one we really enjoyed together was Social Dilemma.
Okay.
On Netflix, The Social Dilemma. Because obviously it sort of speaks, it's about social media and how, it can be toxic, and we both could relate with it because, obviously as public figures, social media is a massive part of our lives. We learned a lot from the documentary. So, we really watch a lot of documentaries. She loves a lot of, she dabbles around even some Nigerian movies. I don't watch too many of them, but yeah, she's more diverse with her selection of stuff she watches. I'm a bit more rigid. Documentaries, news.
Okay.
Maybe a bit too much news.
The great thing is that you can be in any part of the world, and if you're both, or if just share with friends, family, if you're watching the same series, you can like let's start it here and let's all watch it together wherever you are, and come back together and still continue.
Exactly,
so it's actually a really beautiful way of keeping together and keeping each other in check. Whereabouts have you reached on that one? No.
Exactly.
Go back. Not before. No, check again.
We obviously, like, you're not allowed to watch the next episode
before your friend. Or don't tell. Even if you have a sneak peek. Don't tell. No, I didn't.
Yes.
I didn't.
No, but she usually is a spoiler. She spoils it for me because she always spoils. I now tell it on camera that you need to stop that. Need to stop that, Esther. Yeah, because she's always saying, "Do you know what happened?" No,
you can't do that.
Like, come on, like, you're destroying the movie for me.
No,
it's
a great way to now enjoy life, actually.
Yeah.
And again, it's just become smaller. You can be anywhere in the world, like everything else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's all just here. That's really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What about your son?
Oh, Malachi. He's a bundle of joy. I think having a child has changed both of us.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm picking fights like these gambling fights with betting companies because I was thinking, like, where has this kind of conviction come from? But I think it's sort of now you're wondering, like, oh, what kind of a world have I brought my child into? And how can I make it better? How can I, you know, become an example? So I think that for both of us has been, but I think it has given us such a sense of purpose.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's amazing, yeah.
And I think one of the things, how old is he?
He was 1 year last week, Monday.
Great.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that people are beginning to think a lot about is,
yeah.
And luckily you grew up in a home where your career wasn't dictated, it sounds like, and it was freedom of try, but there's still guidelines.
Yeah.
And what we're noticing today is we're preparing our children for careers that don't exist today.
Oh, talk about that.
Don't exist today.
Yep.
So right now you just have to nurture them with the values.
Yeah.
Because you can't sit there and think, oh, he's going to become a pilot and let's go in that direction. There'll be things that we won't be able to pronounce.
Yeah.
I won't be able to pronounce them in like 15 years' time for the things that are coming.
I hear you. Yeah.
So no, that's great. Yeah. And I think it really is just about...
Actually, that's one of the worries. So like it's interesting you've actually said that, you know, the world has changed so much.
It's changing.
You know, that some of the traditional approaches, even to education, you wonder whether, you know, we should subject our children to the same, you know, format or they had make some adjustments. Because like, for example, with the coming in of AI, I mean, AI is replacing right as we speak. I mean, like companies like Amazon laid away 350,000 members of staff or stuff like that, you know. So, yeah, there's going to be jobs that unfortunately, there are people graduating today whose jobs, unfortunately, have already been taken by AI.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so how to navigate now this new era and this new world and how to make sure we educate our children to actually have to be able to solve problems in the real world,
And be able to live in the real world.
And be able to live in the real world,
And I think, well, the one thing that won't go away is that having great values and being hopefully being on the straight and narrow should at least keep you halfway there.
Yeah.
I need to ask more about your globalness, talking about the world and your travels and when you go on tours. So when do you decide to go on a tour? How does it work?
If I'm being honest, I did my first tour last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a massive respect for artists, touring artists, after touring wise, because it is a lot of work.
Mm.
That was a learning experience for me. Fortunately, me and Esther have sort of a policy that it's fortunately she's in the same industry, so... She comes along if she can. The second leg of the tour, actually, she joined us to everywhere we're going. So obviously the life and work balance was good, because what was family then, which was just Esther, was with me everywhere. Now the dynamic is a little different. So it's a little bit different now.
So can you believe that life on the road is life on the road?
It is. It is. It's very even the little short tour I did with Maverick City and Kirk Franklin. I got to see. I personally don't know if I would subscribe to it for a long period of time. Just to give you an idea, I think we had the show here. The show ended, I think it was around 10 p.m. or so. Immediately we're off to the airport. Got on a flight at 1, reached Malawi. We got to Malawi. We actually got to our hotel at 4 a.m. Soundcheck was at 8 in the morning. So that's basically 4 hours of sleep. 8 in the morning, in the afternoon was the show. Immediately after that show, we had to go to the airport again to go to Zimbabwe. And for me, that was just a very short, I just joined them for a little short and I was absolutely exhausted.
Yeah, of course.
But for them, I mean, they did Joburg before that. They did, like, they've been touring. They're still touring now.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work.
It's grueling.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. Yeah.
What did you pack in your bag? What's the one thing that was in your bag?
I packed light. I didn't pack towels because I knew where the places were.
No Nshima?
No Nshima, no.
Like just in case.
non-shima, just deodorant, toothbrush, and some clothes. And obviously, clothes which will be good for stage.
Yeah.
And those which you can wear,
move around in. I want to ask a little bit more about the taking you back. I want to ask a little bit more detail about the songwriting. When you start to write a song,
yeah,
if I haven't gotten this out properly, is it inspired by something, or just depends, or you have to, or somebody says, Pompey, we need a single, or they say we need an album.
Yeah.
Generally, how is it inspired?
I'll say it's always inspired by experiences or things that or ideas that I get, and it from the idea it goes into poetry, then from poetry to music. So actually, before I did music, I was a poet.
Yes.
So that's, I guess, the creative process of poetry. Sort of marrying the poetry and the music. It's like a diary session for me. So I write a moment, an experience, something I've observed, but I'll write in poetry, and then that will translate into a song. Not all of them do, because I just note them down. I just note it down. Some just remain purely just.
So who's there to say, dude, forget about this one, aside, or no, this one we can try, or this one's a good one. Who does that?
To be honest, I wouldn't say there's anybody who does that, because I don't know if I would allow them to.
You're like, I'm taking a chance on all of them.
Yeah, but I do have critics.
Right.
My trusted critics who, yeah, my dad being one of them. My dad is one of those like, No, that's not music.
My friend, no.
That's not music. No.
Tell me now about Pole Pole. Tell me how it was born. Tell me what we're feeling about it.
Oh yeah, actually, it's a good example of the process, I guess. Pole Pole, actually. I was in Livingston. I was by the falls. I love the falls. So every time I go there, I don't go there like for like 30 minutes and like go walk past, and I literally go and sit down.
Okay.
Yeah. So I went there and I sat down. I've got like my little special place where I sit down. So I sat down and I was just watching the falls.
So how does one know that this is Pompey's spot? How we know when we go?
No, I'll keep it a secret. But I had that spot. So I went there the one time, and so I was just admiring the majesty of the falls. And then I thought about it, that obviously the gorge, that the falls wasn't at the place where it is now, that it's been moving, and it's there right now. The falls is what has been created from, mm-hmm. you know, the falls sort of moving backwards to where it is now. And got a feel of the rock that's there. I mean, that rock where the falls is really, really hard. Really, really hard rock. So, I'm trying to not make it churchy, but unfortunately, to explain it properly, I'll have to make it a little churchy. But I have my devotionals as well there. Sort of like I take the time to meditate and just, you know, thank God for the milestones that I may have reached and whatever. Yeah, and the thought came that obviously the rock, the water, something as innocent as water was eating through this hard rock. And I got stuck on that thought, like how can water, something like so
soft,
so soft, be eating through this hard rock? And that led me to think that that's consistency over time, the consistency over time of the water going over the rock is enough to create something as epic as the Victoria Falls, mm. now, which has reached like a critical mass now that it can't be ignored. But it's that consistency over time, slowly. So
isn't that like prayer?
It is. Mm. So at that moment, it became like a philosophy, mm. a life like philosophy for me that I don't look to make grand, just like I just want to be consistent. I do the same things every day. Small steps, but consistent. I get anxious when my days are not consistent now, because I feel these little bits of work that I do in different spaces and different areas. So I have my daily habits that are related to family, my daily habits that are related to work or my creative process. So I basically go through the day checklisting these little consistencies that I stand by. And I've actually seen them transform. Yeah, so like it was a turning point for me. So much so that I had to dedicate the album to that. So Pole Pole means slow, like take it easy. Don't try and look for instant gratification. Be consistent, and consistency is more important than trying to make big moves within like a short space of time. Yeah.
So what I'm also curious about is how the Afro beats are, how they're growing, how it's growing. Afro beats are growing.
Yeah.
Do you think the Zambian music is going to, the Zambian platform or culture is going to pick up on that? Or are we already doing it? How are young people seeing it? Is it penetrating into our music?
I think we are. I believe our music industry is very, very young, extremely young. So I think we are getting to a place where we are forming an identity. I think we did have an identity. With Kalindula, and you know, and I would say there was Kalindula. There was there was the group The Witch. Zamrock, yeah, with Zamrock as well. So there's Kalindula and Zamrock. I would say those were authentically, you know, originally like original sounds from Zambia. But I would say we are still trying to find our feet in regards to creating a sound that identifies our music with, you know, because I'm a piano. It's very obvious when you hear the lock drum, you know it's South Africa. I would say I'm a piano and house and is a bit more unique to Africa than Afro, because Afro picks up from a little bit of reggae and to make an influence. But the lock drum is an invention, you know, that really just you would not so find unique. It anywhere else. So I think the more Zambian artists are free to express. I actually posted something on my social media that a few weeks ago, and I was asking people to help me determine what my genre is, because even I have no idea. Obviously, if we take gospel, you know, if you take the title of gospel, right, or what, just the structure of the music. I don't know what I would call the genre of music that I do.
I think it's going to be really difficult to say this is now still, this is Zambian. It will take a while, and I hear you. Because there's so much influence now.
Yeah.
It's like even, you know, you can go from like fashion, clothes, you know, we've moved away from that because we've got so much influence that it's, some people are trying to like reinvent it, but because the world has become so small, it's now more difficult to keep your own identity, go back, remember it, because you've got influences from everywhere.
Exactly. So I think we'll get there. Copper Belt has obviously, Copper Belt with, I don't know what it, if you can call it a genre. I don't know. The music is definitely unique, and there's the dance, because music is also coupled with dance. So I think, to credit Zambian music right now, the Copper Belt is creating a sound that I don't think is I've heard before.
But also,
and
again,
dance moves that are are very unique to.
But
to
I
Zambia.
Would probably agree with that, because you know, the Copper Belt has always been really unique. They have their own tongue, their own way of doing everything.
Exactly so
I can believe, because I'm not saying they've been isolated, but they have a very strong identity. Give me one thing that is part of your habit that isn't prayer, but it's just with well, one thing that has been consistent that you do every day?
There's definitely, okay, I'll give you a few.
Can be weird, it's fine. It's just us.
So for my creative process, I watch a production every day and I critique a production every day. So I watch it and I critique it, I write my notes on it and what I've learned from it and blah blah blah. So that's on one side, and then I read every day, but I read more less books. I read news. And then I basically follow through on stories. So there are issues that I follow, subjects. I follow over a long space of time.
Mm.
So much so that sometimes I actually feel like I'm an expert in the subjects.
But, like you're stalking the subject.
I'm stalking the subject, literally. I chose news because obviously I think news... It's a bit of a general view of what's happening in the world, and with actually chat AI I go every day. I don't think I go through a day without using AI. It obviously quickens research if you're looking at a certain subject. So definitely reading is 100% a part of my process. And then after I read, those notes of poetry that I write that build towards music, I write from that, whatever inspiration or whatever.
Sure.
And then that's how I did the album. I literally was writing, let's say, 4 lines a day, 2 lines. But I didn't want to write like a full long length song. I just decided whatever on that day, as long as I'm consistent every day.
Consistency.
Yeah, consistent, yeah. And then, there's working out, I jog. And I've seen, obviously, I couldn't do 1.5K. I literally did 1.5K the first time and I thought my spirit was going to leave my body. Now I can do...
Where are you now?
I can do 15, 20K.
You cannot.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Yeah. So,
all right.
Yeah, consistently that's a transformation. That's for me, that's a transformation because have never, if somebody asked me 5 years ago if I could do that, impossible.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I do want to do is one day come and go through your stack of notebooks because I think there's a story to be told in there.
Oh, wow.
Keep them somewhere because they must be locked away.
Will do, yes.
Because it's
yes.
special.
Thank
but you. You have made my day.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pompey.
It's been a great, I've enjoyed my conversation.
Good.
Been refreshing as well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Nice. Thanks. So thank you all so much for joining me on what has been a really memorable podcast conversation with really one of our own and our very favorite Pompey. I've enjoyed it and I really hope you did too.
I loved it.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.